Good morning. It's Tuesday morning. This is Debbie Bosky. It's time for the doctor's point of view, and joining me this morning is Dr. Matthew Minahan, oncologist. Good morning, Dr. Minahan.
Good morning, Debbie. How you doing?
Well, we're kind of good. We just kind of got a little, you know, we had the great holiday, had a little time off, and Fayette County had their fair this past weekend, and so a lot of activities, but a lot of just good old quality time with the family.
Great. Always nice to have a holiday.
It's always nice to have a holiday, and then you have to go back to work.
Oh, it's the worst.
But, you know, coming back to do a radio show with you is really not bad. I that's kind of on the upbeat side. Not everybody gets that pleasure. So.
Oh, please. Well, I'm happy
grateful.
To be here with you. Thank you.
I know, and we certainly appreciate all that you and Texas Oncology does for our listeners. And unfortunately and fortunately, you know, we always talk about the term cancer, leukemia,
right.
Lymphoma, and that's the part that is close and dear to your heart, because you know the good side, the flip side, and the worst side, and you know all that too well. And that's something I want to help to share with our listeners. But we had a lot of calls. We've had a lot of calls asking for when you're going to be back on. So we have quite a bit to cover here this morning.
All right. Well, let's get started then. Yeah.
Well, of course, we talked about the leukemia, the bone marrow, and the different cancers. And then, of course, with a lot of these cancers, I understand, come some blood transfusions. Now, does it matter how long you've had it or what the stage is before you get a blood transfusion? And, you know, you don't really hear of children getting transfusions, but it's actually more common than I realized.
Right. So there's a lot of different reasons that somebody might require a blood transfusion. There are many different blood products, actually. So if you go to your, you know, local Red Cross donation center, if you have a blood drive, they're pulling what we call whole blood out of your arm, right? They're just taking the blood in your veins. But that actually gets split up into many different blood products that we can use for many different purposes. What people are probably most familiar is what we call packed red blood cells, or PRBCs as we call them for short. And those are given when somebody is anemic, when their blood count is too low. And when I say blood count, I'm referring to the red blood cells. And we measure that by labs called hemoglobin and hematocrit. So if you're bleeding and you get anemic, which is the most common cause of anemia, then you may need a blood transfusion. And not all of it is traumatic bleeding, although that can happen. Sometimes it's around the time of surgery or an accident. Sometimes people are bleeding a very low level over a long period of time and eventually just become anemic. And the most scary cause of that we think about is colon cancer. So when you have an adult who is anemic and you can't explain why, their next stop is to a gastroenterologist because you need to figure out if they have an occult colon cancer. But then there's also other reasons, such as you mentioned, leukemias and lymphomas, which are diseases that can affect the bone marrow, which is the factory that helps you produce red blood cells, right? And so if the factory is not working and you can't produce them, then you may need some extra. And likewise, if you have another cancer and you're on chemotherapy treatment for it, the chemotherapy can affect the way that your bone marrow factory works as well. And then from that reason, you might not have enough red blood cells. And so, you know, when to transfuse someone is a great question. And there have been a couple of studies that looked at it. The most famous one that we use was actually a study of sick people in the intensive care unit. And they, you know, half of them, they used a certain target hemoglobin, and half of them they used another. And we basically kind of use that study to guide us. So basically what we do is the hemoglobin normal for an adult is somewhere between 13 and 16 usually is the value we like to see. We don't usually transfuse someone until they're less than around 7 or 8. Or if they're having active symptoms of chest pain, shortness of breath, that kind of thing, we might do it a little bit sooner. If they're actively bleeding in front of you and you know the count's going to drop further, you might transfuse them earlier as well. And then there's other blood products, too. And other than the red blood cells, there's also platelets, which are the cells that keep you from bleeding. There's also fresh frozen plasma, which is just what we call the acellular part of blood. There's a lot of different blood products, but probably platelets and red blood cells are the two most common.
Okay, and so the platelets, is that because of cancer, or do you have other reasons why you would need a platelet?
It's pretty much the same thing. Platelets, you have a lot more wiggle room with. So remember I said the normal value for hemoglobin is 13 to 16, and we don't really transfuse till you get to about half of that. With platelets, the normal value is somewhere around 130 to 450. So if 130 is the lower limit of normal, we don't transfuse until you get below 10. So you have a lot of room to move with platelets. You have to be really low to have a problem. Again, we might be more aggressive with transfusions if you need a surgery or if you're actively bleeding. But the most common causes of low platelet count, liver disease, believe it or not, and that's for multiple different reasons. There are certain autoimmune disorders that can cause low platelets. There are certain drugs that can cause low platelets, and some other more rare things. But again, chemotherapy, especially the kind of chemotherapies that we use for leukemias, lymphomas, and some of the solid tumors, do make the platelet count go down.
Okay. And I know that it's very easy to donate blood, right?
It is. You have to fill out a questionnaire ahead of time because there are certain disorders that the blood donation places want to make sure that they're not exposing people to. So, for instance, if you've been to a malaria-prone area or if you have lived in the UK during certain times, you know, they get worried about mad cow disease. Certainly things like HIV, hepatitis, so they screen out people who've ever used IV drugs and things like that. And if you answer the questionnaire and they find that, you know, there's no red flags, then by all means you can donate. And there's different ways to donate. There's whole blood donation, which is what most people do, and that usually takes about 30 minutes. They'll give you some cookies and juice afterwards for your trouble.
Nice.
Yeah, it's worthwhile, especially if you're a hungry student. And then there's also platelet donations, which can be done where they actually just remove only the platelets, and that takes longer because there's a special machine that does that.
It's a special machine. I know we always have in our area, we have blood drives at our church or some mm-hmm. of the nonprofit organizations. We're always doing that. And we're so grateful for the many that do donate blood because, you know, it's a great gift. I mean,
it really is. And it's a tragedy that we don't do it more because it's a renewable resource, right? It's really easy. You can do it, roughly every 2 months. And most people do it maybe once a year if we're lucky. And the thing is, people are wonderful whenever there's a natural disaster. They all show up in droves and, you know, the blood donation centers are flooded with good donations. The problem is that blood only lasts for a certain amount of time, and so there really is a continuous need for blood. And so I really do encourage people to, you know, make it part of their routine and just do it even a couple of times a year.
Which is just, you know, nothing. 30 minutes it generally takes to donate. So
right, and you can schedule your appointment, right.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I know there's so many other things. Like I said, we have lots of questions. I don't want to, you know, fall short on the transfusions.
Sure.
But one quick question on the transfusions. Do you have to know your blood type? If you don't know, they can still type it for you, or do you have to know that?
No, you don't need to know, and in fact, they won't care if you tell them because they're not going to believe you because
okay.
they have to test it. Blood donation in general is very safe. There are a known list of things that can go wrong with it, but the most dangerous is giving the wrong blood type to somebody. You can actually die from that. And so, if I remember correctly, blood is checked around 7 or 8 times between the donation and the delivery. And the thing is, your blood type can actually change over time. Not the ABO type that everybody's familiar with. You know, there's the ABO system and then the positive negative. But there are actually about 20 different things that go into blood type that we don't usually talk about. And those minor things can change over time if you've been exposed to blood. So they really do run it through testing with every unit. So.
Well, that's very good to know. That's reassuring.
Yeah.
I had a couple of questions on the lymphoma.
Sure.
Now, someone was saying, now, is that the type that is diagnosed because you find a lump under your armpit, basically?
Definitely, you can find it that way. So lymphoma is a cancer of the lymphatic system. Your lymphatic system is your infection-fighting system. It's mostly made up of white blood cells that are born in the bone marrow. And then depending on the type, can live in different tissues or can live in the lymph system. The job of the lymph system is to fight infections, and also, you know, blood goes throughout our bodies, but our vessels aren't 100% waterproof and they get leaky. And so the lymph system's job is to pick up all the fluid that's leaked out and bring it back into the cardiovascular system. So a lymphoma is a disease of white blood cells called lymphocytes that live in the lymph system. And the most common place that you can find lymphocytes on a physical exam would be the armpits, the neck, under the jaw, in the groin. Those are kind of the most common areas. The tonsils also count, so in the mouth. And then the spleen, which is kind of in the left upper part of your abdomen. You shouldn't be able to feel it normally, but it is basically a big lymph node, and if you get lymphoma in there, it can get quite large. There are also lymph nodes inside your body, in your abdomen, in your pelvis, in your chest, that you can't feel, and we may only see on imaging like CT scans.
Okay, and so for the CAT scans, but you may not have pain in those areas, you just actually, what you do is just go to your doctor and they find some sort of critical value of some kind?
Well, see, this is the tricky thing, is sometimes, you know, we don't routinely do scans on people, and lymphoma doesn't always affect blood counts. I mean, it would have to be involving your bone marrow, pretty extensively for us to see it on your blood counts.
Okay.
And usually by the time lymphoma is affecting your bone marrow, it's
pretty
able
severe.
To be found other ways.
Okay.
So a lot of times we'll find it incidentally. Sometimes we do find it by low blood counts. Sometimes we do it by physical exam. But one of the things that we note is what we call B symptoms. And that is things like fevers, shaking chills, night sweats, weight loss without trying, itching, things like that. Those are the systemic signs of lymphoma.
Now, when you say itching, is that like all body itching or
usually,
just in that area?
No, usually everywhere.
Really?
Yeah. And it can be quite profound.
No, without any signs of rash on the body, you just itch.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, and of course, like you said, a lot of times there's no pain or anything like that, and sometimes there's not even a lump.
There are some very slow-growing forms of lymphoma that you may have for years and years and years and never know it. And then you'll finally get diagnosed and come to your doctor, and they'll say, well, this is a slow-growing lymphoma, so we're just going to watch it. We don't even necessarily treat it right away. It really depends on the kind of lymphoma.
How aggressive it is or what type it is?
Well, they're both intertwined. So there's probably 70 to 100 different kinds of lymphomas. Some are much more common than others.
Okay.
But we kind of split them into slow-growing and fast-growing. The fast-growing ones we have to do something about immediately. The slow-growing ones we usually kind of wait until there's certain indications for treatment, which would be things like, you know, fevers, chills, night sweats, weight loss, large lymph nodes that are causing discomfort or affecting other organs, or certain, you know, genetic or molecular markers that we may find that push us in another direction.
So you're diagnosed with it, but it's sort of, like you said, it's not active, so to speak, or it's not growing at the time. You just sit on it. There's no way to get rid of it.
So the fast-growing lymphomas, we call those aggressive or high-grade lymphomas, those will usually cause, those can take your life quickly if we don't do something about it. And
okay.
So those we treat. So the bad news is they're dangerous. The good news is we can cure them. The slow-growing or indolent lymphomas, we usually cannot cure those. They don't respond as well to the treatments. But you can live sometimes 10, 15 plus years with the disease. It's more of like a chronic illness.
Oh, wow. So you hope for the worst kind.
Well, it depends on what kind of person you are, you know. do you want to bet big and hope for a cure, or do you, you know, because if you think about it, lymphoma is a disease of older folks, usually, not always. But if you're 75 years old and you get one of the ones that's going to last for 15 years, you might not need treatment before heart disease or something else, you know, becomes your major issue.
Well, of course, as always, the doctor's right.
You know,
it's just that away. And, of course, you know, here we were going to start talk about our survivorship, you know, after, you know, someone who has, I guess, battled with cancer and now are cancer-free. And I know we need another whole segment for that, but can you kind of share that with me? I mean,
sure. No, that's fine. So survivorship, there are some things that are very easy in general about survivorship, which is it's all the same stuff you would tell someone who's not a cancer survivor, you know. Mm-hmm. Don't smoke, okay?
Right.
If you can't do anything else for yourself, stop smoking, because it is the number one thing you can do for your health. It affects cardiovascular health, heart attacks, strokes, multiple different kinds of cancer, lung, pancreas, bladder, I could go on. Not to mention, you know, lung disease and all other kinds of things. If it sounds like I'm on a soapbox, it's because I am. So, you know, smoking is the number one thing.
And you deal with this on a day-to-day basis. You have every right, because you're
right.
Just trying to help... you know, our people who have that addiction or what have you.
So. And no one's saying it's easy. It's one of the hardest addictions to quit, so there's no judgment involved. It's just something we need to help patients with. The other thing is maintaining a healthy diet and exercise routine. That can be hard in the Texas summers, but it's worth doing. Keeping in touch with your primary care doctor. So even though you're a cancer survivor, you still are at risk for other things. One thing that's unique to cancer patients is that when they get treated with things like chemotherapy and radiation, they're at risk for other diseases earlier than other people would, including heart disease, okay? And so all the more reason to make sure that your cardiovascular health is well taken care of.
Which is so very important, just like with diabetes or anything else. It affects
exactly.
other organs of the body. So.
Exactly.
Wow. And I, like I said, I have 1,000 questions, so we're going to have you back really
That's
soon.
That's fine. We'll just keep going. Yeah.
Of course. Dr. Minahan, please give us your office phone number, and you're located in Bastrop.
Yes, we are in Bastrop, Texas, right on Highway 71, 3107 Highway 71 East, right by the St. David's ER. Our phone number here is 512-308-9024. That'll get you to our scheduler and front desk staff, Carrie, and she can get you plugged in. You can either get referred by your primary care physician, but we also accept self-referrals here.
Awesome, and there is so much that you do right there in the Bastrop office that they don't have to drive to Austin for.
That's right. Here at Texas Oncology, we have full ability to give chemotherapy and shots. We see patients for medical oncology 5 days a week. We're getting a breast surgeon this month, so she won't do the procedures here, but she'll see patients here for consultation and follow-up. We're getting a nurse practitioner in the next couple of months as well to help out, and that's what we're able to do so far, and we have some more things planned for the future.
Awesome. It is just so wonderful to have this information and the ability to just drive down to Bastrop versus having to go to one of the bigger cities. Because, you know, there's so many of us that aren't used to driving in that traffic, and it seems to just multiply every time we get out on the road. And
it does. I drive out to Austin 3 days a week, and it is... I wish I didn't have to.
And, you know, I know. But anyway, of course, but especially when you're not feeling good and you're going for something.
Exactly.
That's the
exactly.
last thing you want
to
do.
Well, we're happy to be here.
And we certainly appreciate you and all the doctors there at Texas Oncology. And once again, I certainly appreciate you joining me every 4 to 6 weeks, allowing some information for our listeners and about the different types of cancer and blood disorders that maybe we can think about and help us down the road.
Great. Well, I look forward to our next conversation.
All right. That's Dr. Matthew Minahan with Texas Oncology once again. And this is Debbie Bosky for the Doctor's Point of View for your hometown radio, 98.3.